This is CliffCentral.com.
Oh yeah, it's that time of the week again. This is Cliff Central, and of course you're listening to the weekly mashup with myself, Timmy Shamasha, and the lovely colored headish. Okay, I'm saying that all wrong.
Yeah. Now people are thinking
you've got colored hair, like you're colored with hair.
With no, good hair.
Your hair is colored.
Colored.
Like green, yellow, all sorts of the colors like that.
Okay. Rainbow colored.
Yeah. I got the lovely colored head lady next to me, Candace Mama.
But hello.
You do have some good hair, though.
I do have good hair. Yeah. Thank you, Mama.
Okay.
My mama gave me good hair.
I didn't value good hair
until, you know, but.
Until what?
Until people told me I've got great hair. But then
how
in high school.
Can I tell you what happened in high school, right?
Mm-hmm. So then I was not an attractive kid in high school. So the only thing I had going for me was my good hair.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then this girl, like this guy came up to me and I don't know, he said something like, you know, he was into me or something. Then this girl turns around and says, well, Candace isn't one of us. So we can't even compete. Like, how dare you? And I was like,
what does that mean?
Like, she went off on this guy. So then I was like, wait a minute. What do you mean I'm not one of y'all? Like, I'm pretty dark skinned.
Yeah.
And then she was like, no, you know, I have the advantage of having a colored mother, which means I'm not actually black.
I was like, wait,
firstly, when did it become an advantage to have a colored mother? That just means having a bipolar mother. Yeah. She's got a lot of personality.
And
that's when I realized that, you know, having good hair does not let me stand in good stead with a lot of people.
So these issues that people are having at these public high schools about black and colored have been going on for years. Thank you, Lord, for taking me to private school. We didn't have those issues yet.
But you know what? I didn't go to a bougie private school. See, they, you know what? To make us feel better, you know what they called it?
What?
Semi-private.
Oh, okay.
I was like, oh, okay. Spare me.
So actually, you know what? While we're at it, let's look at that. Like, there's a news thing that came out this week that, mm-hmm. that boggles my mind.
Okay.
But actually, I'm not surprised.
It just discombobulates you.
Right? It's normal in this society that we live in called South Africa. Because South Africa is an amazing country with amazing people who will always surprise you.
Yeah.
There is a school in Klipspruit.
Yes. That a colored school, by the way.
Yeah, a colored school. Well, if you can call it that. Because really, I mean,
It's a combination of predominantly colored and whatever. It's predominantly colored.
And they're saying, some of the people are saying, I'm going to say all the people. Yes. Some of the people are saying they don't want the new principal because she is black.
Yes.
And they actually wanted a colored principal and they will not stand for this.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, I mean, what's going on here?
You know how I look at it.
How do people even, how do they tell the difference? Because I've been some of those areas, you know. And I know some colored people.
Who look like me.
Until they speak, you're like, if it wasn't for that S-curl, you'd be as black as me. So stop it.
They put a little colored twang on it and they're like, I am colored.
Yeah, everything. They're the most extra colored I've ever met, you know. They have that accent and everything, you know.
Yeah, but you know what it is. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's how I used to view. I used to be like, you know what, internationally speaking, there is no race, a colored race, you know, there's no, you go to the States, colored people and black people are pretty much the same, then you get Mexicans, Latinos, whatever. Mm-hmm. But then I've had to realize that colored people in South Africa have their own way of being, they've got their own belief system, they've got their own, so I'd look at colored people, not mixed race people, but colored people as Mexicans,
I want to hear about the Mexicans or whatever, but I've heard that there's colored people and there's mixed race people living side by side.
Okay, so no, my mother's mixed race, so she's a mix of a white person and a black person who got their jiggy on and formed my mother.
Okay, yeah.
And then they're colored people who are like generationally they've been,
it's a culture.
It's a culture. So it's like, I mean, I was like, in my formative years, I lived in a colored neighborhood. So, I mean, it is different. Like, colored people are like, you know, they've got their own way of doing things. They've got their own belief systems. They've got their own value system. And I
think,
and I think at the end of the day, that's what they define themselves according to, you know, their belief system and their cultural differences. And then they look at, like, I mean, black people, we've got like flipping 11 official languages. So we've got 11 different tribes of black people. You know, so the way Zulu people and Tswana people do things is completely different. Their belief systems are completely different, you know. I think putting like a, let's say, a Tswana principal in a predominantly colored school, it could cause a little bit of friction. I can see that happening. Or even just a black principal in a colored school, because just understanding wise how these students think, and I think that actually goes a long way. When you have someone who looks like you, it goes a long way in maybe how you treat them.
In terms of, let's say, inspiration and aspiration,
okay.
having the people seeing one of their own
yeah.
who succeeded, that's mm-hmm. important. Mm-hmm. And I understand all that.
And in a leadership position,
and
I guess.
In a leadership position. But I also believe that we will never get rid of the race situation that we have in South Africa until at a school level.
Yeah.
We have people understanding that race is really not that important. Because let's be honest, you go to a school and there's a white principal. In fact, if it was a white principal, would it have been the same. Such a big uproar.
No. But you know what I think it is? And this is where it's kind of killing me. It's like, we don't want to acknowledge that race is still an issue. You know, I'm very privileged that the Nelson Mandela Foundation invites me to a lot of events and dialogues. And I recently went to one with Mac Maharaj and a couple of other panelists who were incredible speakers, but I clearly can't think of their names. And
they were just great speakers.
They were great. No, they had incredible South African credentials and history. Yeah. But Lindiwe Mazibuko was one of them, and Lucille something.
Yeah.
But I can't think of a name right now. But anyway, at this dialogue, Mac Maharaj said something very interesting. He said, when Nelson Mandela gave the speech about the Rainbow Nation, South Africans thought that it was going to ascend from the heavens. Like, we're going to wake up one day and it's going to be like, yes, you know.
We all love each other.
We all love each other. And no one put in the work, you know. So no one said, okay, in order to ensure Rainbow Nation, what needs to be corrected? Because a lot of what we did was we ignored the past, right? We were kind of like, oh, shit, yesterday you were like lashing me today. Yeah.
We're all friends.
We're all good.
But why are you still lashing me?
Yeah. Do you pay me now? Like, you know, yeah. I don't understand. Yeah. So, exactly. So that's where we now, like almost 20-something years later, you know, now the chickens have come home to roost. Everyone's like, okay, listen, I will get my stand. Yeah. Exactly.
The only thing that's changed is you don't throw away the cutlery after I use it. Like, that's cool.
Wow. I'm not laughing. I'm not laughing at that. I'm just laughing because I'm in shock.
Oh, you were there, Nathan.
I wasn't. I'm almost a born free. I was 4 years away from being a born free.
Okay.
But
right.
Yeah, but I think it's just crazy. I think the race relations in South Africa have actually never been as tense as they are now.
Personally, I think it's about access. And I also think sometimes it really is about money. Let's just say it's not even about class, it's about money.
No, money is a big thing right now.
Money changes everything. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the upper middle class has less of a struggle with race than the working class and the unemployed.
Yeah.
The rich have, I feel, even less, because it's sort of like, oh, you're rich, so okay, come on in.
We made it all together, thank God.
Yeah.
Let's all.
But when you are struggling for resources at the bottom, then you kind of see that, oh, hang on a second, you are different.
Yeah.
Why am I letting you have this? You know. Yeah.
And race, I think it's very important not to make it a South African problem. I think this is an international problem. I mean, black women experience a three-tier oppression. You know, I mean, when it comes to the paying scale and the paying ladder and how much we get paid for our positions in the workplace, we still get paid the least.
Yeah.
So it is first white male, white female, then black male, then black female. So, I mean, it's like we're really at the bottom of the pile here. So it is a global problem, but it's how do we fix it? How do we change it? Because you're right, it is mostly economical, right?
Mm.
No one cares about like all that stuff if it's not a money problem, really.
Yeah.
You know, the money really weighs heavily.
You're treated differently
when you're rich.
When as a black person, if you got some money.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Like
everything is sir, ma'am, come this way, please come in. Yes, we'd love to help. Blah blah blah. Because they know you're gonna pay a big bill.
Yeah.
But if you don't have money, it's like, what do you want here? We're not giving jobs. There are no jobs available. Get out.
Yeah,
you know,
but it's also like. You know, it's almost like there's a stench on you when you've gone to good schools. Like, maybe the way you walk or the way you carry yourself, like, people aren't as intimidated by you. Because, I mean, I've gone to a lot of places and I've been treated very well. And it's not because I look rich. At least I don't think I look rich. But it's just relatability.
What you're saying, do you think also there's that sense of when you walk into a room expecting certain outcomes,
100%.
You're most likely to get it.
100%.
Right? So if you walk into the room expecting prejudice, if you walk into a room expecting that someone's just not going to like you because of whatever reason, chances are what you are expecting will probably come around.
Exactly. And it's not to diminish the actual racism that's out there. I mean, there are racist pricks everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember my one incident that really comes to mind when I experienced racism. I was the Lint promoter. Mm-hmm. So Lint promoters, you wear this bless Lint. It was such a great time in my life. But you wear these awfully long dresses that cover your knees. It's like you were a church your church, what did they call them? Usher.
Usher, yeah.
It's like your church usher in a red dress.
It's heavenly chocolate.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I think that's what they were going for. And you're holding this tray, right? And,
mm-hmm.
and then I was in Boxburg of all flipping places.
Yeah, so you were asking for it.
Yeah. I was like, it was really your fault. I was like, it's about to go down.
Yeah. There's just certain places that when you drive in, you just have to know that today I'm going to.
Do they
have
allow my people here?
Boxburg, Benoni, most of Pretoria, places like Polokwane, you know, outside of Johannesburg.
Yeah, yeah, well,
and northern
like,
Johannesburg.
Like, do they allow my people?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
do they allow my people, like, when we're not sweeping and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I'm holding this lint tray, right? And then the one gentleman, he's a very old Afrikaans guy. So I'm like, hi, sir, you know, I'm giving out lint today. And I mean, no one says no to lint. I'm sorry, I don't know who you are, but you don't say no to lint.
Everyone wants a piece a sweet piece of chocolate.
Oh. But especially lint, especially when it's lint.
Yeah.
So then I go up to this gentleman and I'm like, hi, you know, would you like a piece of chocolate? And he says it to me in Afrikaans, but basically what translated it means.
Basically, she doesn't know how to say it in Afrikaans because she doesn't know the
language. Yeah. He said something like, and then he marched off. So I was like, excuse you? And I was just like, okay. And then he like marched, like he actually bumped my shoulder and he walked past me. So then I was like, okay, chilled. Okay. But inside I was actually a little angry. So I was like, okay, it's about to go down. So then I was like monitoring him from the side of my eye as he's walking the aisles. So then eventually he comes again closer to me and he's going to go pay. And I'm like, you know, excuse me, sir. And he's like, he looks at me like, fuck.
Yeah.
It's a part. And then I actually start speaking Afrikaans, which my Afrikaans is not great. I don't know what the if I was doing.
So you sounded like a dyslexic, retarded child.
Yes. So then I was like, hoekom praat jy nie met swart mense nie?
Yeah.
And then he was like, and then I swear, like as soon as I started speaking Afrikaans, it was like this veil lifted off his eyes. Now all of a sudden I became human. So then he started speaking to me and he's like, no, you know, and then he actually apologized. Like, we had a whole conversation. I ended up reverting back to English, and he carried on in Afrikaans.
As you would have to.
As I would have.
Yeah.
Because I didn't actually foresee it going any further.
You were just, like, giving it back. And then that was
And it wasn't even with attitude. It was just, like, I wanted to know. Yeah. I wanted to know, does he have a substantial reason not to speak to black people? And we actually ended up speaking, and he was very apologetic afterwards. He was like, he's sorry, you know, that's just how his belief system is, and, you know. And I was just like, okay, cool. And it didn't end up being as terrible an incident as, you know, it could have been.
Wow, well done, Candy. You like, solved
I'm Mother Teresa,
you know
what can
mean?
I say? It was before my forgiveness days. I knew, like, that moment told me, you're going to be the forgiveness girl.
And you're burning for it as well. Not everyone's, like, happy about that. That's a funny thing, right?
Oh, my gosh. Thank God for News 24 shutting down the comments.
You know
God.
What I mean? Like, at the end of the day, I think that we all want to live in that utopia where we don't see race anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Or we say we do. But I'm not sure if we all do.
Yeah.
That was very strange. There is no fast car going through the studio.
Anyway. There's no plane flying past us. We're not outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think some people want to be stuck in their hurt.
There are
people who sometimes, even if you offer them a better way, would rather be stuck in the pain and stuck in their own beliefs where it's like, but if I let this go, then... Actually, who am I?
Mm.
Because without this pain, I don't really have an identity. I haven't figured out the next move, yo.
And that's the thing, right? You have to really start understanding that hurting people hurt people.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes, like, I mean, I remember when my forgiveness story came out, which has been like an incredible, you know, experience in my life. And it has opened so many opportunities for me.
Mm.
But when that story came out, I mean, my family was so affected. I mean, I'm thick-skinned. Like, you can say anything about me as Candace, and I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
It's if you come for my family or people I love, that I'm like, oh, now it's about to go down.
Yeah.
I'm about to shoot some people.
Now
I'm about to...
Your colored side comes out.
My Mexican side. No, but it's like, you know, so some of the comments were so disturbing. Like, because I think a lot of the time people think that if they threaten your womanhood, you know, that they're making a bigger point.
Yeah.
And so many people would comment on the News 24, like, threads. And I knew they were my people. I knew they were black people.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'd say things like, you know, I deserve to be, like, raped and killed. And, you know, if they ever bump into me in the road, like, you know, they're going to. And I was like, that's a sign necessary. Like, you can just be like, I don't agree. Cool.
Yeah, bye. Or you can just be like, I don't even like this story, so I'm going to read something else. How about that? Like, just right there. You saved yourself having to write all this stuff. And actually, I think people don't understand that when you write certain things and you're saying this, you feel like you're safe because I'm behind my
And especially when your thing is John Smith.
You know what I mean? And no one will ever find out. But
yeah.
Actually, it hurts you. I know what it feels like. I'm saying this because there was a time when I would be like, I want to say something as well. But you know when you get that feeling straight after you said something really nasty? And you're just like,
That was stupid.
That was like, why did I say
that? It left like a bitter taste in your mouth, right?
Like, I don't feel any better, actually.
Nothing.
And maybe I shouldn't have said that. So I always wonder, well, I don't wonder anymore. I know, like, usually when people say something, it's not about you.
Never.
It's about how they themselves are feeling about something else. It might,
or even how they feel about themselves.
That's what I'm saying, about themselves. It might have to do with that particular situation. Like, someone might feel like, I have been assaulted racially, or I have been hurt by the other race. So now when you say it's possible to forgive someone who's a racist, you're basically, you're touching me in that part where I still have an open wound.
Yeah.
And now
it's almost repulsive.
Yeah, I can't get to the person who hurt me, but you know what? I can get to you. And so I'm going to take out all the hurt that I've been feeling on top of you.
Hell yeah.
And, you know, at the moment I'm going through something like that. And I just look at this and I said, there's only one way to deal with this.
Yeah.
And that is when people, because you can't see them and you can't, what are you going to do, right? It's trial by social media or whatever. The best way you can do it to counter anything is to just be yourself, stand your ground in who you are in terms of being positive and just carry on with that, you know? But what I've started doing, I don't know if I should say this out loud and then the people who are doing these things are going to know my strategy.
Nah, let them know.
But you know what? I'm liking every single negative comment. All the positive ones, I'm like, you know what, thank you. I know who you are.
Yeah.
But all the negative ones, I'm just going, like. So that those people can see it again for themselves. Because it goes back to them. It's like, this is what you said.
And you know what's funny? It's like almost when you like it or acknowledge it, it's like raising a mirror to someone.
That's it.
Right? Because it's like, look at what you said. And I saw it. And I'm saying, I'm not going to let you define me, but I'm going to let you see.
Yeah.
If that's your belief system, great. Like, you know, that's good for you. But if it's not, and it's something you said out of anger or trying to get my attention, because I feel like a lot of the time when people say these things, they're actually just crying out for your attention.
That's
you know, because at the end of the day, my life is too busy for me to be attacking every Tom, Dick and Harry who I don't agree with. I mean, I had a point on my social media where people would add me just so they could insult me, you know, and they're like, I feel like that was a lot of effort for you. Like, you literally waited like weeks for me to accept you just so you could get this off your chest. You know, like, I hate you. Okay, thanks, boo.
And then
every other picture they're going to say, I hate you. I'm like, wow, I'm so happy I take such a present place in your life that every day you got to check in and just make sure that I know. I'm like, that's so unhealthy. Like, go eat a sandwich or something. Like, go be happy.
You know what? Like, you know? Go do something that makes you happy.
And I wouldn't even block them. I wouldn't even block them or unfriend them. I just keep going.
I decided to stop blocking.
No.
I was blocking, but I'm not blocking anymore. It's okay. Give it your best.
Because blocking is like, it gives them a story, right? At the dinner table.
Yeah, like, and then he blocked me.
Yes.
And then
like, she blocked me. Oh my gosh. She's all about forgiveness. She's all about forgiveness.
But then she blocked me.
I'm just like, okay, boo, if that makes you happy, good for you.
Okay.
You know?
So anyway, I guess this would lead us into that segue. I mean, you spoke about the power of a single story, right? The things that we tell ourselves that manifest in our lives.
Yes.
What were you talking about?
Okay. You're like, I don't quite understand
this is what you said, okay?
Okay, so when I got into the speaking field, the one thing I actually started encountering a lot is that a lot of people are married to their story, to their narrative of their life, right? So you meet someone who's maybe 50 or, you know, and they say to you, you know, when I was 18, this is what happened to me, and I've never been able to move past this. How do you do it? And I always used to think to myself, the narrative that we tell ourselves define our stories. They define where we go in life. They define what we do with our lives. Because if your narrative is, I'm not good enough, no one will ever take me seriously, no one respects me, no one loves me, guess what? You go through life, and that's what you attract. You attract people who affirm your own core belief. And you end up at a point in your life where you're like, when did this happen? You know, how did I become this person, or when did I get to this place in my life? And that's what I've started to realize. And that's why one of my core messages is, you know, you and only you have the power to rewrite how your story will end. You know, you can't give your life over to society or to your friends or to your family or to your loved ones and say, you tell me what I'm supposed to do with my life.
Yeah.
You know, because then you're always in a space of disempowerment, you know.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's what I mean by that.
I love that because that's a great way to start the topic for today in terms of the power of a single story or a single narrative.
Mm.
We all have these narratives, and a lot of the negative ones are very comfortable because
100%.
When you have a negative narrative and I am able to say the reason why I'm where I am in my life and I have not achieved certain things is because once upon a time, Candy, when you know, last year or the year before, you said this to me or you did this to me.
100%.
So now I am still stuck here because of you. Because now if I take responsibility and say, you know what, I won't let you define me. I won't let you be the person who has the last say in this.
Mm.
Then I have to take responsibility.
Mm.
I actually have to be that person that I said I was, which is I'm victorious. I'm a survivor. I can do this. And that takes a lot of work. That takes more work.
Oh my gosh.
Because, you know, I can tell you now, sitting at home, you know, when everyone's gone and drinking all day, starting at 9 a.m. Like you wake up and you just start drinking and you're drinking the whole day and you're smoking and you're doing drugs and you're doing all sorts of things is easy.
Oh, it's comfortable.
Like it's comfortable, you know, especially if you've got a comfortable.
It's not ideal, but it's comfortable.
It's far easier than waking up at 5 or 6 in the morning and going for a run and then writing that proposal that you
said
you'd write.
In a sober mind.
Yeah,
in
a sober
mind.
And then going to a presentation and having someone tell you no and trying again until you get the yes that you were looking for and then succeeding and doing it all again.
Yes.
Because let's be honest, success doesn't start where it's easy. It's like pushing a stone up a hill. You got to push it up first and then let it gain that momentum when you've gone over the hump.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the times we tell ourselves that story because then we can wrap ourselves in that warm blanket of negativity and say, but she did this to me and now I'm hurt. So I'm going to sit here and just be negative and do these
and
negative
be sad
things because it's Candy's fault. And meanwhile, she's going on living her life and doing amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to create another narrative. You see, there's no justice, there's no peace in the world, blah, blah. She hurt me, but look what she's doing with her life. And then, so the single story keeps growing and growing and growing. And the best part of it is when people affirm your single story and say, oh, shame, man.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
She did that to you? No, this is terrible. Come sit with us for a while. Or we're also, you know, sitting here having a pity party. Come join our pity
100%.
Party. 100%. And before you know it, you've lost, like 2 years.
Not even. And you know what's sad? You don't even lose 2 years. 2 years is such a small time to actually lose in the grander scale of things. I think it is you losing, you get to the end of your life and you realize how the single story has been, you know, coming up in your life consistently. And you are so right. Like, I don't even know how many times to tell people this and how to emphasize it or to, you know, like, just scream it. Like, if I could scream it in someone's face and just be like, listen to me. It would be that being negative, being in a state of sadness, being in a state of constantly self-pity, you know, it's so easy. It is so easy. You know what's hard? What's hard is saying that I've gone through a hard time and I'm going to grow through this because it didn't destroy me. Yes, it sucked. Yes, I cried.
Yeah.
Yes, it was painful. But I'm not going to let this one human being define the rest of my life, right? Because that's what people do. Like, I don't even know how many people I meet that are like, 10 years ago, I met the love of my life and they broke my heart and I'll never love again. I'm like, I will never give any one human being that power.
10 years, you haven't loved? You can live without love for 10 years and you're planning to keep doing this?
I'm like, I got broken up with 6 months ago. I'm still looking, man. I'm like,
I got broken up with 6 minutes ago. You want to try this love thing with me?
Yeah, I'm like, we on a date right now. Like, I don't know if you're not planning to love again, you need to keep it moving, man.
Yeah, I don't know if that's what I would sign up for.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the problem. People get so tied up. And the worst part is when you're living in denial, in a state of denial. It does not affect me that this happened to me. You know what? All of us have, you know, I've met more people with a sad story, a sad backstory, than I have with a happy backstory. You know, I meet more people who say, I was abused in my youth. My mother didn't love me. My father abandoned us. That is the more common narrative that society faces than I grew up in a loving home and, you know, this and this. Because all of us are like, if my mother loved me more, I'd be in a different space. If my dad had been there, I'd be in a different space.
Even if you grew up in a loving home, if you want to tell yourself that narrative, you will find something there. In fact, there is no such thing as a perfect home. It can
never
be loving, but it's not perfect.
Never.
You know what I mean? But you have to take responsibility and at some point say, that happened, but I might never know why. But at least one thing I do know is that did it make me a better or worse for it?
Oh, my goodness.
Because you could... How many people have also grown up in homes where you go, wow.
And then they turn out different. Yeah.
And like, but here you are. Mm. Now we are, you know, older and you haven't done anything. You've hardly even moved on.
That's the problem. So I've got a friend, a former acquaintance, I should say, because I'm something that you call an empath. So, I mean, I pick up on people's energy and emotion and, you know, it ends up affecting me negatively. If you're constantly negative, I'm going to start feeling that negativity. Yes. So anyway, I was acquaintances with this one person and they grew up in the best home one could imagine. They grew up in such a loving home, in such a, you know, everything. Like, I mean, they're going for about mid-30s now and... Yeah. Still, their family is there for them, giving them the support and financial support that they need. And every time, I kid you not, for every silver lining, they found a dark cloud. Like for every happy moment, they found something sad. I was like, goodness gracious me, if I had the opportunities you had, if I had the family you, if I had the love that you have, like my life would not be where it is right now. And here you are looking for a problem, a nail in every solution, a puncture in every tire. And you can't have people like that because you need people who are constantly looking for the silver lining, not the problem. Yeah. Because we all know those people. You come to them with a solution, they'll give you a problem. No, but don't worry, you know, So what? That person left you. Now you've got room for more love in your life. Someone who's going to preach. No, but you don't understand, eh? Even the guy before, hi. And the one before, ha. No one loves me. Even my mom said.
Problem now. I think you are. Because all these different people came into your life. And they seem to have left you for the same, in the same way. For the same reason. So maybe you're the problem. I don't know. But I think what you're saying makes absolute sense. In that nobody turn around at a TED talk, for example, or anyone who's successful and said, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that I have never forgiven this person, I wouldn't have made it. Nobody ever turned around and said, my success is due to the fact that I held on to something my whole life.
I'm where I am because I'm a resentful mofo.
Like, I remember my father wasn't there for us. And to this day, I think about him every day. Before I go to work, after I leave work, everything that I do, I think about him. Unless it's, I think about what happened, that he wasn't
and
there.
And I would never be that person.
And I would never be that person. So I work hard every day to make sure that I'm not that person.
Yeah.
Because we can't say that people haven't hurt us. That's fair. You have to find somebody.
Oh my goodness. People are constantly hurting us. Are you kidding me?
I'm going through this. But I'm getting through this.
I'm going through it.
And I'm going to get through this. I'm not going to stay here. But I'm going to be honest. Right now, wow.
It's tough.
But trust me. Because also, I think the people around you that could possibly help you, after a while, you won't have the best people around you.
Oh, no.
The best people that can help you are like...
They start leaving.
I'm trying to just live my best life. And I can't hear the story every day.
Because I keep trying to give you solutions. For every solution, there's a problem. You know. Like,
and
I can't.
And I must say this, because I know guys do it. As guys, we do it different. Because you'll have these guys, right?
Yeah.
That you will go and sit with them every Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. You'll be out drinking, doing your thing, thinking that you're having good times.
Yes.
And all you're doing is commiserating.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you won't believe what she did.
Oh, yeah.
My wife did this. My girlfriend did this. Mm. They're so... She did that. You know what? And then before you know it, you've been there for a year... And that's what you talk about. And things have probably gotten worse, not better.
Because now you affirm in your environment, right? You're not doing anything to get out of it.
But I'll tell you something. There are people who, you know, if I went to speak to them about this, the first thing we'll probably do is like, okay, guy, the first thing we need to do is like, let's stop having this conversation. Let's forget the positive things in life. You're like, no, right now I need this.
Mm.
Right? I need to be angry about this. Mm. But if you just sit with those people for a while, before you know it, you would probably be living your best life.
Yes.
But you're trying to avoid them. I know I tried to avoid some people in my life when I was going through the very toughest things in my life that I wanted to keep going through.
Mm.
And I tell some of my friends now, and I'm like, I'm sorry. For the past 2 years, I know we didn't talk
much. I
needed
to cut you out of it.
But I didn't want you to tell me to stop doing this. Because I was still enjoying myself.
Oh, 100%. But the fact that you can acknowledge it, right?
Yeah.
The fact that you can acknowledge that I needed to be in that place of pain. And that's the thing. Like, I never say to people, rush through your process. I mean, 10 years is a fucking long time to be in the same process. But
It's too damn long.
Really, I'm not rushing you, but 10 years? Goddamn, you have, like, skipped a decade of your life trying to feel
sorry. Decade is a long time.
Oh, damn. Yeah. So considering we only, biblically speaking, we only promised 8 decades. So, I mean, hello.
Yeah.
You know, you need to calm down.
You lost one. You lost one whole one.
Okay, so, I mean, I don't... I don't say to people they should fast forward their pain. I think there's a very incremental thing that pain does for us. It causes us to reflect. Nothing will cause you to reflect like pain will cause you to reflect. You know, and I was listening to India Ari, and she was saying that, you know, she went through a breakdown. And basically after this breakdown, she became the best version of herself, because she put herself first, because she realized, you know, I keep listening to everyone's opinion about me, but when am I going to start living a life that's truthful to my purpose? And she actually retold, everyone knows about the phoenix that rose from the ashes, right? Mm. And in mythology, actually, the phoenix itself set fire to its nest, because it knew that if I remain in this place, I'm never going to grow. I'm never going to reach my full potential.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time we stay in a place, we outgrow it. We physically feel too big for the space, but we refuse to leave it. You know, those childhood friends that you're like, but Bob and I have known each other since six.
He's a nice guy. Oh. I do that to myself a lot. Right. I'm like, but
he's a nice guy.
I don't want to be
How
that
am I going to justify?
You know, that I'm just like, I'm not talking to this person anymore. And I know that every time we get together, it's pity party time. And we're going to just get involved.
And every time they call
behavior,
your phone, your heart actually sinks to the bottom of your soul.
And you're like, but you know, I don't want to be. Actually, what it is, I just don't want to be an asshole.
No.
You know, because he was there for me. You know, when I was going through my hardest time. If I could call Bob at 12 midnight and say, dude, I'm going through something, I need a drink, you want to join me? He'd be like, yeah.
And Bob will roll out of bed. He'll be like, I'm actually at your door.
I mean, I was waiting outside with a bottle. Whiskey or gin this time, you know? And you're like, now that I'm getting my life together, now I'm like leaving Bob. And he was like, if I was thrown out of the house, Bob was there, man. He would like let me stay at his place. And then what would we do at his place? We'd like be drinking. And then, and now I'm like, I'm trying to live a better
life.
And
now you're too good for Bob.
Now you're too good
for
Bob.
But you know what the problem is? And I suffer from incredible guilt. And guilt gives me anxiety, because I'm always like, shit, if, you know, this person or whatever. But then I've had to start really assessing the situation, and I've been like, you know what, it's not like during this duration of the friendship I did not give back to this person. It was a mutual relationship. And now that we've outgrown each other, it's only fair that we let each other go. Because sometimes friends or relationships from our past keep us back, because the person doesn't want to see you outgrow that stage of your life. And all
and
of us are constantly growing. And if that person, every time you're with them, they want to take you back, like the only thing you guys talk about is high school or primary school, or, you know, constantly in the past.
Or last week,
it's constantly backwards.
But also, talking about the pain, right?
Yes, constantly.
And always like, coming back to the negative things in
life.
Oh
my goodness.
Like that person.
Remember when that person hurt you.
Yeah.
Remember when. And some people I found that were actually in my life. I mean, I was dating someone. We both know he tried to run me off the highway. And I got a little bit. But he can't even speak proper English. I don't know what the hell
you
I was doing.
You should do an Instagram post of that. You know,
I should be like, remember.
2 years ago, this happened. I'm celebrating.
You know how famous I'd be if I did that. But thank God I want to get famous the right way.
Depends how famous he is. Actually.
He is actually kind of.
Okay.
You know him. He used to. So I mean,
did you drink together?
Probably. No, actually, he doesn't drink, which means he's got other issues.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, I'm done dumping on the poor dude.
Yes,
But yes, so when I dated him, he actually came with a lot of friends, because people were like, oh my, I was only 22 at the time. And
which wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, 4 years, going for 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I was 22 at the time, he was 34. He was 34, I was 22, he had a really prominent career and a really great career. People loved him and respected him. And when we started dating, I got a lot of new friends, right? And because I'm very naive, I was very naive. I was very accepting of everyone that would, like, you know, come into my space and just be kind to me. And these women were just constantly, we'd be speaking about my relationship. Like, none of them wanted to disclose what's happening with them, but it was constantly about me. And obviously, I'm learning all of this looking back. But everything was like, oh my gosh, you know, is he doing this for you? Is he doing that? Oh, he loves my estate. He does this. He does that. He does this. He does. And then I realized that, wait, the only time we speak, you guys call me every single day to check up on me, quote unquote. But you don't actually ask me about anything other than this individual. Then this guy sat me down and said, you know, your friends are a little shady. Like, they're trying to get with me. And I used to be like, oh, you think you're so full of yourself.
Just
on you.
Because you're hot and famous and rich. Like, don't think every woman is trying to be with you, okay?
I mean, I didn't even know who you were when
we
started dating.
Look at you with your 66 pack.
So what, there's a communication barrier. You know, we make it work.
Yeah. You look beautiful. You don't have to talk. Shut up and just stand over there naked.
Okay. And so, I mean, and he warned me. And, I mean, our relationship came to an end pretty, yeah.
Abruptly.
It came to an end in a very dramatic way.
He wanted you out of his car while the car was moving.
Something like that. Okay. And it sounds so abusive. He wasn't as abusive. He just tried to run me off the highway. But just another day in the life of Candace. And,
That's so bad.
Yeah, but you know, we were both hurt at the time. And I think when he left my life, these women left my life as well. They started becoming protective about their boyfriends and their husbands. And all of a sudden, I wasn't like flavor of the month. I was the woman who was trying to you know, encroach on their territory. And I realized that they gave me a hard lesson, but I was like, if people don't, you know, if they're not good to me and if they're not there for authentic reasons, I don't want them in my life. And I started really prioritizing my own feelings and saying, but I matter. You know, if I care about myself, then I can't allow people to treat me in this way. And I think that's when you really start to realize that, you know, friendships aren't like marriages. You don't have to sign a divorce contract to leave a friendship.
Oh, okay.
You can just like, you can just be like, look, this is not working for me, and you can move on. And it's not even as hard as a breakup, right? A romantic breakup, it's like,
whoo. No. You don't understand. I broke up with a friend recently.
Oh, tell us more.
She didn't take it very well, you know.
A female friend, of course.
Yeah,
she didn't.
I kind of like saying like I'm moving on, you know. I'm stepping. I think maybe I was too vague. I should have said I'm stepping away from you. But I was like, I'm stepping away from people and places that are not good for my growth and that are not good for me.
Was it a platonic friendship?
Was it a platonic friendship?
Yes. So was she aware that you had no romantic interest in her?
I would hope so. You know, I mean, like there was
it's
never
very
gonna
difficult.
Work, you know
it's very
I mean?
Difficult.
And then this person like just didn't get the message and they kept calling and stuff, and you know when you're like, but I've said this, so I'm not going to pick up the phone and have to tell you to your face. And then my mom gets a WhatsApp, in fact my mom gets a call and a WhatsApp message. Ooh. So now my parents sit me down like, we're just concerned because your friend, you know, she was so hurt and stuff.
She's going through a breakdown.
And I had to explain it to them. I had to break it down. And they were like, oh, what? She didn't
Are you sure she didn't fall though? Because I think that's the biggest problem with platonic relationships, right? A lot of the time women, we in control of the platonic friendship a lot easier. But then as soon as the person we platonic friends with, sometimes this has only happened sometimes, gets into a relationship or into a steady situation, we're like, but wait a minute, I thought I was waiting for you to get on.
Yeah, I was
waiting for you. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I thought there was a line here. Yeah. Like, how can this new chick just come and jump the line?
This is one person I could call at any time if I was having drama.
Oh, no.
In my last relationship.
Oh, no.
She was always prepared to help me out. Like, she was like...
She was the crying shoulder. How dare you?
Yeah. So
how
she
dare
was like,
you?
You even have a room at my house. Anytime you need to use the room, just come
is
over.
She in a relationship?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much so.
Okay.
So, but you know what? When you say this, I know.
You know deep down what is happening.
We always suppress our intuition,
right? Yeah. Because it's like you coming to me and I say, this is my friend. Like, you don't understand. He's like the greatest friend ever. And you're looking at him like, he ain't no friend to you.
Yeah,
like, he's just waiting.
For you.
Patiently.
To lasha.
Yeah, to like close one eye.
Yeah, just close that eye. I don't know, tell you that way.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we know our intuition. We know.
Yeah. You know what? My intuition always said so. I guess that's why I got to a problem. I'm like, this new chapter in my life. Because you realize that also some friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, they add more drama to your life.
Oh my gosh.
Have you ever wondered why when I'm with this friend and.
It's almost like everything goes to
shit. Always drama around this friend. And when I'm not with this friend, like, I realize.
It's smooth sailing, man.
This whole year, I haven't been like.
You've never had one anxiety attack.
But I haven't even had drama in my romantic life, my family life. I'm just like drama free.
You're good, yeah.
And I'm like, I just like to keep it this way. That's why you're not in my life. And then when you say to this person, I'd like to keep my life drama free by not having you in it, that's when they get all dramatic and you realize,
I see you.
There's the drama. That's where the drama is.
Why is it so hard for us as human beings to recognize this, right? It's almost like when you're in a relationship or a situation or a friendship and with someone toxic, it's like literally there's a veil over you.
I think it's
then
guilt.
Eventually when you exactly because usually they trap you with emotional stuff, right? Like, oh no, I was left and abandoned and this and this and this and you're the only person I have, and then you feel obligated to this individual, and then next thing you know you're like, bloody hell, I'm never gonna grow with this human being in my life. Who do you know?
Exactly. Or it's the other way around where actually they were always there for you when you were going through tough times, right?
But sometimes you get those friends, right? Yeah. Who only wanna be there when the shit's going bad. When it's good it's like then they want to rehash all the bad stuff that happened to remind you.
They always want to remind you of the bad stuff, right? And then you feel guilty. I know I do. I feel guilty. And I'm like, now that my life is really cool, how can I let go of these people who are always there for me? But
it's,
I think there's a difference between someone being there for you and someone adding drama to your life. Because I think that a good friend also has a line that they draw where they say, listen, guy, you know, at the moment, I think I'm also just trying to deal with my own stuff. I'll give you an example.
Yes, please.
When you have a friend who is always available to you.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, you know, when you pick up the call, if you were in prison, that is the person you would call just to pass the message to the others.
You know what
not
I mean?
Even your mother answers your phone back.
Exactly.
Quick. Yeah.
But I think to have a healthy friendship, you also have to get to a point where you're like, listen, right
boundaries.
Now I'm at work. I'm with my family.
Boundaries.
I'm at yoga. So I really can't come and commiserate with you, you know.
Can I come after yoga?
Yeah, can I come after yoga?
Or maybe tomorrow breakfast.
Yeah, like let's do something positive tomorrow together.
Exactly.
You know? Then you know that person is probably a truer friend than, oh, I'm always here. And she said what? She did what?
Because sometimes they're living vicariously through you. Sometimes those are the friends who like, they so a part of your existence that they too are kind of making the decisions with you, and you kind of like, it doesn't seem odd at the time until you look back and you're like, this person is me in a different form. Yeah. Like they're trying to live my life.
And then you notice that we never made positive decisions together.
Ever.
There was never a, hey guys.
Looking back, there's nothing.
I think we've had enough to drink now. It's kind of late.
They're always the one that's like, it's post some more.
You want to leave? Are you crazy? Have another drink. You know your wife is crazy.
Yes!
You don't want to go to that house.
Like, no, it's terrible.
Right. Wow, you really sympathize. You get my story. Okay, I'll stay a little longer.
That's the problem though. But that's why for me, I've really cut it down. Like I've got 5 friends that I like that are my core friends. Mm-hmm. And those are my friends that I don't just call for any damn reason. But if shit goes down, I know these are the people I can turn to. And each of them individually, like, you know, I'll speak to them because I don't like group friends either. Like, I'm not a group friend person. We do not have group friends. Like, I am the middle man. When it's my birthday, we all come together. Then we all go our separate ways. We are not doing this group friend thing because there's always drama in group friendships.
There is, isn't there?
So, like, I'll speak to, like, this friend and then this friend and this friend. And then I get different opinions on, like, okay, this is what I'm going through. What do you think? And all of them always do it from such a positive place. They're like, you know what? You're going through pain. You're going through heartbreak. And it's okay. You know, feel the anger. Feel the grief. Feel this, and you're like, oh, thank you, friend. Then they're like, okay, but tomorrow, no, like, cry today. No, you can cry all day today. I'll stay on the phone while you cry. Damn it, I'll drive over there and I will comfort you while you cry, and we will burn pictures of this nigga. But tomorrow, you are pulling your shit together and we're moving on
for all of us.
You're right.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important to be the kind of friend that doesn't just always be like,
shame. He did what?
Oh my god.
Oh no.
And then 3 weeks later, you're still crying. No, girl. I understand.
It's painful.
No.
You know?
Like, no. Like, no, I understand it's painful, yes. But, like, I mean, let's revisit this in 3 months.
Get up. Get up, girl. Wash.
Wash.
Put some makeup on.
Wash. Put on some clothes. Like, face your day. Face your life, you know?
Go out there. Rejoice.
Right?
Okay, I'm trying to find a way for us to bring this to state capture.
Oh my gosh.
I just can't.
When people state capture your mind. You know what?
Because it's happening, eh?
Human beings are as complex as this, what's happening, this web of state capture that we're dealing with. You know, and relationships.
But for me, it's like, just when you think we've hit rock bottom, eh?
Nope.
Like when you think, okay, they took all the money from Prasa, from Sasa, from Eskom, from the department of this and that. They took everything. It's like, no, actually, they
stole more to take.
They stole more than that. What you thought they stole even more. I drove past the house in Saxon World yesterday.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
The Saxon World Shebeen.
I was like, for all the money that the state is passing on, couldn't they just like renovate or just like maintain the house? Because the wall has got cracks. It needs to be painted.
It's called going incognito. It's called going incognito. Like,
I
need to really get
a little bit sharper and brighter, you know. They could cut the grass a little bit more.
That's how you know that the Guptas never offered you a contract.
I think so.
But you know,
maybe I'm just jealous because they never offered me a contract. I'm not angry at what people are doing. I'm just angry that I wasn't part of it.
How could you leave me? Do you know who I am?
Don't they know who I am? Like, you could have made a fake movie.
Oh my gosh! But you know what's crazy about it? Like, you go onto one site, right, that tells you about what's happening, about state capture, about all these crazy things that are going on, and it leads you down this rabbit hole of just like, this could be a movie, this does not feel real, like, this is so crazy, the web is so twisted, there's so many plot lines and plot twists,
there's so many
that you're
people.
Like, you're like, oh my god, this cannot be real.
I mean, the latest
thing
that the NPA is now part of it, so basically that, you know, if you've noticed that there aren't, some people are not being prosecuted for certain cases that they should be prosecuted for, and some people are that they shouldn't be prosecuted for, you're like, oh, okay, now I get it.
Crazy.
You know?
Crazy.
What I mean?
And then, like, when you find out that the Eskom thing, you know, that Brian Molefe actually, they were load shedding on purpose. It's like, what? To drive prices up, because there's 3 billion rand missing, like from like the Eskom money, and you're like.
And actually, they gave Brian Molefe for the 30 million. By the way, if you're thinking that they were still talking about it, no, he's got that 30 million. He's living with it.
Okay, but the one thing you've got to love about the Guptas, they come with cash in hand. They don't like let you assume.
They bring bearing gifts.
Yeah, they don't. They like the three wise men, and they're like the three Indian brothers.
Yeah.
No, they come like they come with the the money in hand. Like
they come with the money when in you, the bag. When they don't say
it's not hypothetical.
No, it's for real.
it's
so
like,
I mean, who can stand against that?
It's crazy. I actually. Like I was even looking that there's a Gupta Leaks website that where everything you want to know about the Gupta and the files and the leaks, it's on this website. And when you find out that, you know, the hiring and rehiring of the finance minister and, you know, Praveen Gordhan having to go along with Jonas, Msibisi Jonas, it's like, wait a minute. Like, I just feel like I'm in a crime thriller and I don't want to discover anything. I don't want to read any deeply. I don't want to die. I don't want to get a death threat. I'm good.
This crime thriller is real.
It's so real. And people are actually being threatened. I mean, there's the lady who's got the wild hair, the afro hair. She's always in the parliament. She's so cute.
Makosi Kosa,
yeah. And she's been threatened. She said that, you know what, they're giving me a month to live. And they're saying that, you know, in a month, should I not shut my mouth? This is what's going to happen. And I'm ready to die. I'm ready to die for the truth. And I'm like, girl, you better than me. I'd be like, I'm going to an island. I'm going to marry like a little tikka bar man. And
I think the problem is because she didn't get any of the Gupta money, she can't really go to an island. It's a bit difficult.
No, I'm not saying you're going to own an island. I said you're going to marry a man who owns a tikka bar on an island.
Oh, okay.
She's a woman. She can make it work.
She can make it happen. Like, come on, girl. Make it happen.
I'm like, this one time.
But it's crazy what's going on in South Africa at the moment. And I always say it's the most interesting country to live in because every week there's something that's going to happen, you know? Like, don't worry. Like, I'm at a point where I'm like, I don't mind what they say because people will write stuff about me, right, in the press and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, just give it a week. The Guptas will do something more crazy. Just everybody calm down. It's okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, just it's okay. It's okay. Like, I'll accept it.
After 5 days' time, no one will remember my stuff. Like, we're talking about the Guptas.
Because you don't even, like, I look at it and I'm like, I'm not even into celeb news. Like, I'm just waiting for the drama that's constantly unfolding in Parliament. I'm like,
celebs have got nothing on the Guptas.
We are in some
Bonang shit. Bonang and AKA have
nothing,
got nothing.
Nothing, nothing, nothing. Like, no one's got, you know how fucked up you've got to be. You've got to literally kill someone in order to be able to be a bigger deal than the Gupta
Leaks. Yeah, at the moment.
And you've got to kill someone so prominent.
Yeah.
Like, it would have to be someone associated with the Gupta Leaks. You've got to be like assassin.
It probably wouldn't last more than 7 days because there'd be another Gupta Leak that would make it like you didn't know that this happened while you were away, while you were figuring out why Candace killed
whoever.
Yeah, Baleka Mbete. This is what happened.
But can I ask you something? Do you feel like because there's so much information overload and there's so much happening that it's almost like it starts to desensitize you to actually the reality?
I'm a little bit numb to it.
Right.
At the moment, I'm just like,
I'm just out there living my life.
What do you want me to do about it now?
Right.
Because if I keep being emotional about every single story,
you're gonna die early.
I'm gonna,
like,
have
a heart
attack.
Be a very early, but
so
that's
just like
the thing.
Okay, whatever, it's a new thing. Okay,
It's actually in this political climate, it's affecting my money, okay, because people don't want me to speak about forgiveness now because, well, they're
at the moment, we're like,
we're a little angry right now. So,
we don't want to hear about forgiveness. What are we gonna do about you, man?
But what, okay. See, if someone asks you, like, what are we gonna do about racism? What are we gonna do about the current political climate? What do you think we're gonna do? Like, I don't know. I'm like stumped. I'm stumped.
I'm stuck because all my good ideas seem to not have worked.
Okay, what are your good ideas?
Well, here's one thing I think we should do. You know, I think that the law should really work better. You know, I think, for example, things like a lot of the violent racial crimes.
Hmm.
If we saw that the law will come and get you, and you will go to jail and you'll be punished, at least there'll be a sense of justice. But sometimes we don't
even have
that.
If we clamp down harder.
Yeah. By clamping down harder, I don't necessarily mean like we have to give people harder punishments and we have to be like a military state. But just when you do something wrong, there's something's going to happen in return.
A proper ramification.
Yeah, proper, you know. Number one. Number that's with that. Number two, I also just think that we need to prosecute corruption. Otherwise, we feel like we're helpless. So when people feel that they're helpless, they do helpless things. So they react with more anger. They react more violently. There's violent protests instead of a petition. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think we need to see that sort of thing happening. I think that's what's happening right now.
I think people just feel like they're not being heard. You know, like, I mean, and this is also of no... And this kills me. Remember when we had the whole protest? Zuma must go. Zuma must go. Zuma must go. Yes. I mean, it's hard to forget our anthem. We had that whole thing, and almost like overnight, as quick as it happened, it disappeared.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the fickle nature of the middle class. You know, we get comfortable really quickly, and we don't see things through. Like, I mean, if that had happened continuously for a couple of days, I mean, this country would have become ungovernable, and change would have had to occur.
Maybe.
But possibly.
But here's the thing, right? I think that also the problem is, and I had it so well framed, but we are overwhelmed by the problems that come up. You think it's just, if we just get rid of Zuma, everything will be fine. Then you realize, but it's not just Zuma.
Yeah.
There's more, you know what I mean? And then there's this other guy as well. So what am I going to do? I would say that this is not about changing regimes, not changing who the leader is. It's a heart condition. We all have to get to a point where actually, you know what? As people, as human beings in South Africa, our hearts need to change. We have to, the way we treat each other, way we think about our own success and how we're going to get it, if that doesn't change, then we'll always have a problem.
Be kind, people. Be kind. Yeah, I think that's the number one thing.
If I had to tell my 20-year-old self something about what's going to happen in the future, it's just always err on the side of having been kinder than trying to get your own bag.
Every time you try
to get your own bag, it just leads to more problems.
I love it. I think that is exactly where I would go with that as well. I'd say, you know, always be kind.
No.
Always be kind.
I'd probably say something like, sit down.
And be humble. Bye. Don't I know. It's levels to it. You and I know. Tell them be humble.
Sit down. This is CliffCentral.com.